Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, I think we better get this thing going. It's getting late here. It's 6:09 a.m. on the 19th of December, 2007. That makes this Solder Smoke 72. Good morning from Rome. You know, I got to start out with something here that's almost completely unrelated to ham radio, homebrewing, and QRP, but I'm going to try to make a connection here, and I think you guys will be interested in this. Back in Solder Smoke 55... loyal listeners will recall that I mentioned something that happened to us in Rome. Not Rome, in London. That's where we were before. I went out one morning to get some milk and bread for the family, and I discovered that on the corner near our house in London, there was a film crew filming a Bollywood movie. I know some of you guys have never heard of Bollywood, and that's a shame. That's part of the theme this morning. Bollywood is, of course, the Indian film industry, the film industry of the Asian subcontinent. It's bigger than Hollywood, and I got to tell you, some of the movies, in my view, are a lot better than Hollywood. Although I guess that's not really saying much, but they really make some great movies. And I was happy to find that one particular morning in September, I think it was September 2006, they were filming one right on the corner near my house in London. So anyway, you'll recall I called my wife. I told her to bring down the kids, and I said we were all going to have great fun watching them make a movie. The kids came down, and the next thing I know, we were being recruited to serve as extras in the big Bollywood movie. And I was told that I was going to be the one, that I was going to be the extra. This was my big break in movies, guys, but because they told me that they wanted somebody who looked English, because this was, of course, a scene being shot in London, England. And I guess my being of Irish descent, I was pretty close to looking English, whereas my wife is from the Dominican Republic, and the kids, maybe they looked a little bit less English. Anyway, whatever. We all thought that I was going to be the selectee. But when the moment came, I was sitting there kind of, you know, combing my hair, getting ready for my big break in the movies. And the production crew came up, and they just basically said, oh, no, not you. No. He pushed me aside. And so it was my wife and kids who were going to be in the movie. So I kind of forlornly went off, and there was a Starbucks nearby, the Starbucks that we used to go to quite regularly. And I just went in there and sat down and got myself a cup of coffee and watched the spectacle there. And I watched them shoot about 10 takes of basically my wife and kids walking down Fulham Road in London, umbrella in hand. They had to have this rain machine overhead shooting out artificial rain as the stars of the movie. And I'm talking about big stars here. We're talking about Amitabh Bachchan and Tabu did their thing right there, and on Fulham Road. They kind of had a kind of an encounter. They met each other in front of the restaurant. They had a little bit of a discussion, and then we went on to the next scene. All right. So we all thought, that's it. Let's wait and see when the movie comes out. Well, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and it came out. I guess it came out sometime last summer. We didn't get a chance to see it. It was in the movie theaters in London, but we were in the process of moving ourselves, so we didn't see it. And it recently became available on DVD, so I sent off my ordered Amazon.com, and a very nice package came back. The movie Chini Kum. Okay, we fire it up. Of course, we immediately fast forward to the scene where we're supposed to be in it, or they're supposed to be in it. And oh man, wouldn't you know it, we didn't make the cut. Our scene on the cutting room floor. There we see the scene with out in front of the Starbucks there, out in front of the restaurant. But Elisa and the kids, nowhere to be seen. So we set up. Well, it was a lot of fun anyway. We liked the movie because it's a good movie. It's fun. And it's all in the neighborhood around our house. This weekend, we had visiting us from London some friends from the UK, and we said, "Hey, let's pull out Chini Kum. Let's watch it. I'll show you the scene from our neighborhood where we were supposed to be in the movie but weren't." Anyway, we put the movie on. We're watching it, and I'm sitting there looking at the screen, describing, and I'm saying, "Okay, here's where Elisa and the kids were supposed to be walking across." And I was sitting right over on this side of the screen, and bang, there I am. I didn't realize it. But when they were shooting the scene, the camera shoots in through the window at the Starbucks. I didn't realize they were doing that. And yours truly, M0HBR, is seen sitting there, forlornly drinking his cup of Starbucks latte. So, irony of ironies. I made it into the movie, and my wife and kids, who had been selected for the project, did not. So anyway, I'm not in the credits. It's Chini Kum, a sugar-free romance with Amitabh Bachchan and Tabu and Pareshwar Rawal. Really good. I recommend it. And if you've never seen a Bollywood movie, this might be one for you, and you can get it through the Amazon.com store that we have up there on the Gadgeteer.us and Solder Smoke websites. Check it out. The only connections to ham radio in this whole thing are, one, we have a lot of Indian listeners. And I think these movies and Bollywood and this production is a good reminder of the great, tremendous creative talent present there in India, and a lot of it is kind of bursting out. We see it in the BidX 20. We see it in all the great projects, all the great homebrew projects and designs coming out of India. And the other connection to ham radio was this. I told a story, I think, on one of the previous Solder Smoke episodes about how my daughter Maria and I used to walk down to this particular Starbucks near our house, and one day, Maria, at age 4, looked up and said, "Look, Daddy, a spaceship." I didn't believe her. And I looked up, and sure enough, there was the distinctive light of an overhead of a satellite. And I checked it out using the Heavens Above webpage later on, and indeed, 4-year-old Maria had spotted the International Space Station. So those are the only two connections to ham radio. Tenuous connections, I admit, but I wanted to share with you the story of my big break in Bollywood. There we go. Okay, sort of continuing on the same theme. So I got a kick out of this one. I think you guys might like it. As you know, I'm involved in an effort to try to get an Italian amateur radio license. I've got my American license, of course. I've had a Dominican Republic license. I've had a reciprocal license in the UK and in Portugal. Now it's time to get the Italian one. We're working on it. I'm joined in this effort by another radio amateur here, another American now resident in Rome, a guy who works with me. He's Hank, K1DOS. Hank played a big part in the effort to get Iraq back on the amateur radio bands. And he and I may have had something to do with that. We really don't know, but we're happy with the result. Anyway, Hank and I are now both recently arrived here at the embassy, and we're in the process of applying for a license, and it became necessary for us to get a hold of the reciprocal license agreement between the United States and Italy. This is something that's drawn up, I guess, in diplomatic circles, and then it goes on the books. The agreement between the U.S. and Italy, I think, was developed in 1980 or 1981, and somehow Hank was able to dig it up from the archives. He had some connections in the appropriate offices back in Washington, and the next thing you know, we get an email with a PDF file attached, and I open it up, and there it is, very official, with the Great Seal of the United States Department of State letterhead on it, and the title of the document. I found this was very appropriate. Drum roll, please. Alien amateur radio operators. Yes, yes, indeed. So now Hank and I are trying to get some licenses from the Italian authorities, and to do that, we're using a document with the title "Alien Amateur Radio Operators." That would be us. So anyway, we'll keep you posted. I think it's going to work out. We seem to have the legal and diplomatic authority behind us. Let's see, not much on the workbench these days. However, I am charging up my 12-volt gel cell battery. I've stuck my Volkswagen solar panels in the window here. We don't get too many photons hitting this particular window, but there's a little bit of charging activity each morning. And little by little, my 12-volt gel cell is being charged up. I refuse to charge it with anything but solar power. That way, when I use it, I can rightfully claim that I'm using renewable energy sources. I usually use it to power the Heathkit HW8. I think that's what I'm going to do when I charge it up this time. My problem is sometimes I leave the HW8 on, and that, of course, drains the battery down, which starts the cycle all over again. But little by little, the 12-volt gel cell is getting charged up. Speaking of battery charging, this brings us to the red planet, to Mars. I was reading on one of the, I think it was one of the NASA websites, that the two rovers that are still active after all these years, Spirit and Opportunity, winter is coming. I think winter is approaching in the northern hemisphere of Mars right now. I think that's where the rovers are. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I've always been interested in the maneuver that they have to do when it's time for these rovers to winter. As you know, they've been performing far, far beyond their original, I think their original planned lifespan was like 90 days. I think they're into their third or fourth year now. Great stuff. And one of the ways they've been doing this is that they, when wintertime comes, because the sun is low on the southern horizon, they find a hillside that's got the appropriate, that's kind of upsloping with the slope, I guess sloping going down to the south, and they drive the rover up onto the side of the hill, so it's got a good angle to catch the little available sunlight coming in from the south. So anyway, we hope that they both rovers get through the winter very well, and we hope that NASA finds a good place to park, to put the solar panels in the right angle. Speaking of Mars, I have not been up on the roof yet with the telescope. I think I mentioned that I have to kind of take it easy on the neighbors here. I don't want to overwhelm them, and seeing me up on the roof at 5 o'clock in the morning with a mysterious looking large large mechanical device, the 6-inch Newtonian reflector, might blow some circuits here in terms of the neighbors. So anyway, but I got up this morning and I could see out the right out the window. There was something up there. Was obviously a planet off to the west. It was off to the west was was Venus. Of course, Venus is not much to see in the telescope, but Mars is off to the east in the morning, so I might have to get the telescope up on the roof. I checked Heavens Above, the website. I recommend it. It shows that early in the morning we have Saturn overhead. Venus to the west and Mars to the east. That would be four planets, including the one we're standing on. So I'll have to check it out. Anniversary this week, December 16th, according to Wired, the Wired website was the birthday of the transistor. Happy birthday to the transistor, and very important day to us. I think it was December 16th. Got some more emails about the Australian shed movement, and I found out I had heard about one. Well, somebody wrote in about a shed for rent out there in Menlo Park, California, near San Francisco, an operation called Tech Shop, and Make Magazine coincidentally ran a story about this. I got a kick out of it. They said their ads described it as Tech Shop, a health club with tools, a Kinko's for geeks. Anyway, it was the operation out there was founded in 2006 by Jim Newton, who's described as a BattleBots builder and former MythBuster. Well, I guess those are good qualifications in our book. So those of you out there in Menlo Park, give Tech Shop a visit. It sounds interesting. I wish they had one here in Rome. On the subject of tech shops or workshops, an interesting article came across the email mailbox here, and it's about the guy who runs, I guess he's the information systems guy at one of the stations on the South Pole. And it was a good article there, a good interview with him. I'll dig it up, and I promise to put the link on the Gadgeteer.us, Gadgeteer News website. But it was real interesting because it was this guy describing what it's like to be in charge of the electronic systems at the South Pole station during the winter. During the summer, I guess it's still difficult, but I think at least you can get airplanes in and out. Of course, once winter hits, they're in there for the duration. I think it's 3 or 4 months without any airplanes coming in or out. And it was real interesting to read about how this guy does his work under very difficult conditions. So I'll try to put that on the website. Let's see, what else? Last episode, I described my efforts to understand mixers and the whole process of frequency shifting. This is one of the central bits of technology in everything we do as radio amateurs, and I've always been kind of annoyed or bothered by the fact that I really don't understand how mixers work. I mean, I know what they do. I know about the end products, some in different frequencies, but I really have never in my mind come to an understanding of how that happens. Why, when you put two different frequencies into a simple diode, for example, or four diodes in a ring mixer, or into an NE602 chip, why is it that at the other end you get some and difference frequencies? How does that happen? So I am plagued by what Paul N8XMS has called the curiosity curse. This is, I think, related to the knack. I mean, we've discussed the knack before. This is the knack, of course, is what all of us were afflicted with. Usually hits at the age of, I think, 12 or 13. Almost always, but not always, in men. But it's mostly a disease of males here, adolescent males. It hits, and then of course it never really stops. It fades. Sometimes it goes in. It comes. You know, it goes away for a while, but then it always recurs. The knack. A subset of symptoms of the knack is called the curiosity curse. Sometimes it's called black boxophobia, and this is where the victim wants to really understand what's going on in the black box. And the black box could be a Yaesu ICOM, Kenwood FTX 3000B-0 transceiver, and you know, you have it in front of you, and you're kind of bothered because that big black box is a mystery to you, and you feel as a true radio amateur you should understand what's going on in there. But black boxophobia can also, and the curiosity curse can also extend down to really small black boxes, like those little 2N2222 transistors or little diodes that are being used as mixer circuits. That's what I have this week. I don't understand how the mixer circuits operate. I understand the math. Yeah, I understand how to multiply two sine functions or two cosine functions. I understand how the equations cause you to realize that, okay, yeah, there's a sum in different frequencies at the output. But, well, if you really have the curiosity curse and black boxophobia, that's not quite good enough. You're looking for kind of more in the gut understanding of it, and that's what I've been struggling with. It's an interesting topic. It's really important, so I don't mind spending time going through the books on it. Some of the I think some of the guidance provided by the books is misguided or misleading. For example, you see a lot of them will talk about, will kind of relate the mixer phenomenon, the electronic mixer phenomenon, to what happens in acoustics. And they'll present the phenomenon of beat frequencies in acoustics. This is I think, first discovered or explored by an Italian musician. And he called it il terzo suono, or the third sound. And this is, of course, what happens when you get, I guess we could all remember this from high school physics class, you get two tuning forks pretty close in frequency. You get them humming, and as you pull them together, you can hear the woo, kind of the beat frequency there. And they always describe this as the result of constructive and destructive interference, where the peaks and the troughs of the two waves are, you know, alternately combining and then nulling each other out. Sometimes this kind of, it's real easy to draw a diagram with this. You draw the one frequency on the top, then you draw another line with the second frequency, and you show how at some points in the two cycles they're adding, at some points they're countering each other out, and that's how you produce the difference frequency, which is the beat frequency. I got some email. We had some email discussions of this, and I'm told that you really can't use or apply that explanation to multiplicative mixers, the kind that we use in electronics. It just doesn't work, and that's not really how mixers work. So anyway, unfortunately, some of the books present it that way, and I think it's a good example of how some of the explanations in the books are not really quite that useful. That's why you have to have more than one book. So I continue to struggle with this. I'll continue my study of the mixers. Hopefully, I'll alleviate some of the symptoms of black boxophobia and the curiosity curse. But thanks to Paul and XMS for letting me know that I'm not the only one afflicted with this. Paul talks about how he often finds himself lost in the mysteries of quantum mechanics and quantum electrodynamics when he starts trying to understand how a particular circuit really works. You know, you start out figuring out why they put 1.7 volt bias on the base of a simple popcorn transistor, and then if you dig deeper and deeper and deeper, next thing you know, you're wondering about where the quarks all go and why electrons have negative charges and why they're attracted to protons and all this kind of stuff. This is kind of going off the deep end. This is an indication of a real bad case of the knack, the curiosity curse, and black boxophobia. Unfortunately, folks, I don't think there's any cure. We can only deal with the symptoms. All right. What's next? Oh, there was an announcement came across about, I think this came from the ARRL newsletter. I get it electronically. I'm always grateful. It's a great source of news about ham radio. And one of the recent episodes described an award. This is a really cool award. We've talked about the Elser Mathis Cup. You guys know what that is. This is the one that one of us is going to win for the first two-way radio contact with radio amateurs on Mars. I joke with Billy and Maria that they are candidates for this prize. Here's another one, the Armstrong Medal. Oh man, this would be a good one. This is a big award. This is given out by the Radio Club of America, which those of you who are in the know that this is one of the elite radio associations in the United States, in the world. It's really very, very old. It goes back to the earliest days, the really earliest days of the radio art. I visited their website. I recommend it. And they've got some great stuff there about the history of radio and the origins of the club. And it's really quite touching to read about where the Radio Club of America came from. It originated with a bunch of kids in New York City who were interested first in model airplanes. They started, it was a model airplane club. And they, because of their intense technical interest in the model airplanes, they at the time they were building these planes, radio kind of burst on the scene. I guess it was like, I don't know, it must have been 1907, 1908, and there was this discussion of spark transmitters and all this. So that became the new thing, and they shifted away from airplanes and got into wireless. Again, it seemed to be started by a bunch of teenage boys in New York City, and that became the origin of the Radio Club of America. I looked at the list of the original members, and they had Reginald Fessenden as their technical advisor. Of course, he's one of the great names in radio. The first person to make a broadcast using voice on the radio waves, and I just found really interesting the description of the early days of the Radio Club of America. They give out a medal. They don't give it out every year. I understand they give it out from time to time, the Armstrong Medal, because Armstrong is apparently a member of the club. But wow, that'd be a good one. So. Those of you who really do something great might become a candidate for the Armstrong Medal. That'd be a good one. Speaking about history of radio, last episode I think I read from 200 meters and down, the great ARRL publication about the early days in radio. Another book that I think everybody should have on their shelf. It might be a good Christmas gift. It's available from the ARRL. And they've developed an index for it, and the ARRL newsletter describes the development of the index. I think that's a great addition. It's important because the book is, of course, very, very useful for people who are doing historical research, and now we have an index for it. So three cheers to the ARRL and whoever came up with the index for 200 meters and down. I'm sure it's available from the ARRL website. Check it out. I mentioned Armstrong, and I came across in my study of the mixers. I came across an interesting thing that I didn't know. One of the many things, of course, the term superhet. Okay, we all know that it's short for superheterodyne. But why super? Okay, is it like really a great heterodyne or what? Not a mediocre heterodyne. Why superheterodyne? Well, it's short for supersonic heterodyne. And that is, of course, they knew about heterodynes that occurred at audio frequencies. But, of course, when you're doing mixing to get to an intermediate frequency for the kind of receiver that we're all used to today, the mixing is occurring at frequencies far beyond the sonic range, so it became known as supersonic heterodyne. Apparently, heterodyne itself was a term coined by Fessenden. Hetero, of course, meaning different, dyne, sound, different sound, describing the mixing process. So now we have supersonic heterodyne and superhet, the term that we all throw around to describe the receivers that we're building. Bit of sad news. An institution in ham radio, especially for fans of big iron and AM and modulation transformers and old boat anchor rigs. Peter Dahl had operated a custom production facility for transformers, RF chokes, modulation transformers, power transformers. If you had an old rig where the transformer went bad, Peter Dahl would make you a new one. And he's been in business for 40 years, performing a really important service for ham radio operators, mostly in the United States, but I'm sure around the world also. And unfortunately, for a number of reasons, Peter Dahl's having to get out of the transformer business. So we'll pass along our thanks to Peter. And I have a feeling that that somebody else is going to step up to the plate, perhaps somebody operating from a developing country. This might be an opportunity for somebody it might already be out there, but for somebody to fill the gap left by the departure of Peter Dahl's company. I say this because I remember when I was back in the Dominican Republic, I was always amazed that there were guys literally operating from street corners in the kind of electronic district of Santo Domingo, who would rewind a transformer for you. If you had at one point I needed an RF choke for my HT37. And man, there was a guy just operating from a little wooden table on a street corner. You'd give him the bad choke, he'd crack it open and rewind it for you. Do the same thing for transformers. And he did a great job. So, who knows? Maybe somebody out there in a developing country will be able to find a business opportunity here to fill the gap left by Peter Dahl and company. Again, thanks to Peter for many years of great service to ham radio. One website. I'm going to post this one up on the video page, but if I forget, you guys will be able to find it. YouTube has a new page up there from the Computer History Museum. If you just do a Google search for YouTube and Computer History Museum, Google or Yahoo will take you there. Some really good videos on all different aspects of not only computer history, but electronic history, a discussion of the early days of the transistor, things like that. Really high-quality videos, too. I think you guys will like it, so worth a visit. Check it out. And that, let's see, I'm looking here, looks like we're at about the 35-minute point. So it's that time. I don't think you guys have to cover your ears anymore. I think we've got the audio levels under control, but here goes.
Sorry, smoke mail bag.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. A lot of good email coming in over the last week or so. Al wrote in about the audio quality. I always ask about the audio quality, and people are telling me that it's been better since we've made some adjustments and put the foam rubber across the front of the microphone. So thanks to everybody for those comments. Al notes that there seems to be a big difference in audio quality based on which MP3 player software you're using, not just the device, but the software. And I've noticed that too. Sometimes if I fire up a particular audio player on my computer, I think all of us have several, there seems to be a big difference. So if you're dissatisfied with the quality of the audio coming out of your computer, you might try a different player. Of course, what I'm doing here is the standard argument used by people who, when there's problems in communication circuits, essentially I'm saying, Hey, the problem is at the other end. But I think there might be some truth in this, so give it a try if you don't like the sound quality. Folks are telling me that sounds pretty good, so there might be some truth in my statement that the problem is at the other end. Just try a different audio player. Real audio seems to work pretty well for me, but there others may have your mileage may vary. So try some different ones if you'd like. Marty, WB2REW, wrote in with something that I, as a native New Yorker, he noted a mistake that I, as a native New Yorker, should not have made. I attributed the deja vu all over again comment to, I think that's what I said, to, I said it was Casey Stengel, and Marty points out that it wasn't Casey Stengel, it was Yogi Berra. My apologies to both Casey and Yogi, and to New Yorkers everywhere for that mistake. I'm really bad about this too. I feel bad about it because I want to point out that that my grandfather played for the New York Yankees. Yes, it's true. You can check him out. He's in the Baseball Encyclopedia. Last name is Mara, spelled M-E-A-R-A. Baseball fans will. We'll check him out. He did pretty well. He played one season for the New York Yankees, and I've been bragging about it all my life. My grandfather was a big league baseball player. There you go. Sorry, Yogi. Sorry, Casey. Sorry, Marty. Thanks for straightening us out. Ivan, W9ILF, writes in. He's a big Solder Smoke fan. He's doing something unusual. He has built an audio amplifier to boost the signal coming out of his computer and MP3 player, but he's doing it in kind of a different way. He's doing it with tubes, with valves, with fire bottles. Fine business there, Ivan. He sent a picture of the contraption, and I was briefly concerned because it was all kind of breadboard and open air, and I certainly wouldn't want anybody to electrocute themselves in an effort to listen to the Solder Smoke podcast. That would be a bad thing. So, but anyway, I read more carefully Ivan's email, and he says that he's using 12-volt tubes. So I guess that's 12 volts not only on the filament, but 12 volts on the plate. I don't think you're going to be able to do too much damage there, Ivan. So drive on, old man, and thanks for the email. John, G8SEQ, wrote in with some very helpful comments about the my struggles with mixer theory. Thanks, John, for that. And John also indicated that he is a victim of he thinks he's a victim of the knack. And I've been reading John's emails over the years, and I told him that there's no doubt in my mind that he has been a victim of this condition for many, many years. He's got a confirmed case of the knack, and I think also with some of the curiosity curse and black boxophobia symptoms. So, we're all in a big support group here, John. So we're happy to help you. I want to thank Ramakrishnan, our friend in India, one of our many friends in India, for sending me in some great websites on the mixer issue. Those were very helpful, Ramakrishnan. We hope you're doing fine there in Bangalore, and I hope that your RFI problems have not come back. Let us know if necessary. We'll use the same extreme measures that we used in the past to deal with that troublesome power pole transformer. All right, guys, let's see. It's coming up on the 40-minute point here. I've gone through just about everything on my list. I'll let you know that we're in the process of recruiting some guest speakers here. And some of them are going to be in time zones close to Rome. We have Ron, who's currently in Dubai, who has agreed to stop by, and we're just waiting for him to fire up to get his Solder Smoke, his Echo Link software fired up, and so hopefully he'll come in and talk to us about some of his homebrew adventures in Dubai. I think that'll be interesting. And in the new year, we're going to have, I think, some more guest hosts here, and it'll be less of me droning on here in my low frequency monotone. I think people appreciate that. Also, hey, send us in some more band sweep segments. If you're listening to something interesting at your location, send it in. Audio clips also of all different kinds are appreciated. If you go to a ham radio club meeting and you want to do some interviews, send them our way. Same thing for ham fests or similar events. Those are always welcome. I think we're going to do another one here before Christmas, but you never know. We might get busy with the holiday season here. Still got a lot of shopping to do. The Christmas tree is up, but here in Italy, Santa Claus is known as Babbo Natale. That, of course, would be me in this house, and so I've got some Babbo Natale duties to take care of. So if I don't do another solder smoke before the 25th, I'll say Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy holidays. And we're looking forward to generating some more solder smoke during the new year. For now, 7-3 from Rome.